And welcome in. It's been a hell of a week. So we have our first Saturday show here on the Doug Russell Podcast. This show is supposed to come out on Friday, but with the death of Hank Aaron, I called an audible and pivoted. So here we are, the Packers and the Buccaneers for the right to go to the Super Bowl. But we have to start this show with the passing this week of former Packers general manager Ted Thompson, who I will fully admit I've had some fun with over the years, most famously with this little gem.
Oh, I have sizzle.
So that's one of two drops that the old Doug Russell show on WSSP contributed to the lexicon of Milwaukee sports that became somewhat ubiquitous. The other one, of course, is...
Super Pitch, great.
Now, the stories behind these drops honestly aren't that interesting. In the case of Ned Yost, it was him trying to convince reporters that Jeff Suppan didn't pitch like a dumpster fire one night after giving up something like six earned runs in four innings. So when my old morning show partner, Mike Wickett, was playing some of the sound bites from the night before, we got to, you know, Jeff Suppan. It really wasn't that bad of a night. In fact, Sue pitched great. And what?
Sue pitched great.
Wait, what?
Sue pitched great.
So I don't know how many times that's played on Milwaukee radio. I'm sure it's in the several thousands. That's fine. We've contributed two things to the Milwaukee radio lexicon. Of course, Sue pitched great, and...
Oh, I have sizzle.
And the story behind that, the story behind...
Oh, I have sizzle.
...is more good-natured, because Ted was just shy around us in the media, but he had this dry wit that came out when he picked his spots. And I think the question was something about... you know, making a draft pick or a choice or a signing that had some sizzle. Fans say that, you know, these draft picks don't have any sizzle. And then Ted, with kind of a one-liner that was an aside, gave us...
Oh, I have sizzle.
And it was a joke, because every once in a while, Ted Thompson, who was, again, just a shy guy, every once in a while you'd see this dry wit of his come through. So we gave him the nickname the Sizzler, because as we learned...
Oh, I have sizzle.
So it was good-natured. I think probably a little bit more good-natured than our criticisms of Ned Yost trying to polish the turd of a Jeff Suppan dumpster fire type of outing. But my interactions with Ted, and I'm cutting this on the Saturday before the NFC Championship game. It was 10 years ago today, January 23rd, 2011, that the Packers won the NFC Championship game in Chicago.
Rodgers is under center. Four down linemen for the Bears. Rodgers gets the snap. And he hands off. Sweep to the near side. Starks gets a block at the five. Runs outside the numbers. He dives in. It's a touchdown! The second rushing touchdown for Green Bay. A four-yard touchdown run by Starks, who got a nice block from the fullback. Running outside the numbers. Coming over the right tackle. And Randy, Green Bay is on top. 13 to nothing early in the second quarter over the Chicago Bears.
Third and five, 6-12. They've tacked another second on the clock here.
What an advantage. If you could get Olsen involved, he hasn't done anything all day long. 0-9 on third downs today.
Haney is under center. Green Bay's got one defensive lineman. He drops back to throw. He throws it short. It's intercepted. It's picked off by Raji. Lumbering to the 10. Down the sideline, the 5. He's inside the pylon. It's a touchdown. 340-pound B.J. Raji has intercepted the young quarterback Haney, run it in for the touchdown, a 17-yard return. He was rumbling and stumbling down the near side, 20-7 Green Bay.
Breaking huddle after crouching and telling the team what he wants to run. He's got a second and goal, does Rodgers. He's under center. There's an offset eye with Kuhn. He gets the snap, he fakes the handoff, he rolls to the near side, he's at the five, running to the near side, the goal line, dives inside the pylon, it is a touchdown! Aaron Rodgers with a one-yard touchdown run, and Green Bay has knifed their way through that Chicago defense.
And it was Ted Thompson in the locker room, uncharacteristically, actually meeting the media that day. He didn't really talk to us all that much, except for after this game.
I don't know. I don't think we do anything any different than everybody. Everybody always says that, but I think we're pretty normal. You know, people like to build through the drafts and when they can, sign a free agent. But I'm not sure I'm answering your question, because I don't necessarily agree with the premise.
is there any extra satisfaction in this kind of production over signing, you know, the non-big name guys? I mean, signing guys off the street and just getting performances from
No, there's not any more satisfaction. I'm very satisfied that we won the game. I don't take any personal satisfaction out of the way we do things, because we do things the way Ron Wolf taught us to. Everybody that works in our personnel department, I think, was tutored under Ron Wolf, including myself. So we're just doing our job. What's impressive is when new guys come in and step in and play and do well, and our coaches take them in and they're not nervous about it, because sometimes that doesn't work too well. It's like, oh, woe is me. And that's not the way our guys approach it. Mike McCarthy? Mike is, I said when I first hired him, I was hiring the man, I wasn't hiring the coach. He's a good man. He treats his players fairly. He's honest with them. And those are the two absolute requirements in order to be a head coach. But he gets them prepared. He's got a good coaching staff. He cares about the players. All those things are good assets to have as a head coach.
4 or 5 big games this year.
Right. And that's the nature of the NFL. Everybody's pretty good. And it's a hard business because most games come down to like this, even though you don't like it when they do. It's rare when you have blowout wins or blowout losses. So I hope we've kind of put to bed that whole thing. We can't win close games.
Ted, how gratifying this is for you personally, a guy who built this roster and built it your way and did things your way to get to this point?
We've had that question before.
I know, but we got in late, so I apologize. I don't take any
personal satisfaction. I am proud of our staff. I'm proud of our coaches, and I'm proud of the players on this team, because they did what they have to do to get this far. Now we have another step we have to go.
You build a roster from the bottom up, and that always manifests itself in special teams. In your opinion, how good has your special teams been over the last 4 or 5 games and today?
I think they've played very well. You know, we've had some hiccups along the way, but especially facing a special teams group like we were facing tonight, it's terror for me, because I'm just sitting there watching like you guys are. But they attacked it. They were aggressive. They did what we had to do to win this game. And I think they won the game for us.
At the end of the day, Ted was a scout who was so good at his job, he kept getting promoted. And his philosophy was simple, and it never wavered. The Packers were going to be a team that builds through the draft. And that's what he did. He hit a lot. Packers drafted by Ted Thompson include Aaron Rodgers, headed to the Hall of Fame. David Bakhtiari, it's possible he could be a Hall of Famer. Nick Collins probably would have been a Hall of Famer if he hadn't had his career cut short by injury. Jordy Nelson, Clay Matthews, Davante Adams, Kenny Clark, Aaron Jones, Brian Bulaga, Greg Jennings. The list goes on. Ted Thompson's fingerprints are all over this year's Green Bay Packers team. It's undeniable. Now, there were some whiffs, though, as well, because Ted Thompson in the first round did draft guys like Derek Sherrod and Justin Harrell and Dayton Jones and Nick Perry. Perry had one good season. Dayton Jones, he had kind of half of a decent season. Justin Harrell was a complete bust. So was Derek Sherrod. So there were some whiffs in the first round, and there were some whiffs in the second round as well. Brian Braum was a whiff in the second round. Jason Spriggs, Mike Neal, Pat Lee, Terrence Murphy, Brandon Jackson. There were some whiffs. Alex Green, Aaron Rouse. So not every general manager hits 1,000, and Ted Thompson certainly didn't bat 1,000. I liked Ted Thompson personally. My criticisms over the years of Ted Thompson had absolutely nothing to do with his character. I know that everything that he did in his mind was the right decision for the Packers. And I'm comfortable with that. But yes, I wanted to see him be more aggressive as Packers general manager. I wanted, as long as you've got back-to-back Hall of Fame quarterbacks, because they do not grow on trees. And just based on the odds, I would be surprised. I'd be pleasantly surprised, but I would be surprised nevertheless if Jordan Love turns into a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback. We all didn't think that Aaron Rodgers was going to turn into one of the greatest quarterbacks in NFL history and someone who is going to be better, because he was and is, better than Brett Favre. Brett threw a lot more interceptions. I think Brett was more entertaining than Aaron. Brett took us on this roller coaster ride that Aaron never did. Aaron was just so steady. Aaron was able to outscore other teams and cover up a lot of the warts that Brett was never able to do. But my point is this. Brett Favre should have won more than one Super Bowl. Aaron Rodgers should win more than one Super Bowl, and maybe this will be the year. If you're listening before the NFC Championship game, we all hope that's the case. If the Packers don't win the NFC Championship game and you're listening to this after the game, then you can probably disregard the last, 45 seconds or so of the show. But there are so many similarities between Aaron and Brett. And one of those similarities is the fact that until there was major free agents brought in and, you know, more of an exploration of bringing in guys from the outside that weren't drafted by the Packers, that's how you win a Super Bowl. In 2011, well, the 2010 season, but the 2011 Super Bowl, Super Bowl 45, the leader on the Packers, the emotional leader on the Packers, was Charles Woodson, who was brought in as a free agent because nobody else wanted Charles Woodson after his first stint with the Raiders was over. He came to Green Bay and became a Hall of Fame player. You look at the players that won Super Bowl 31 for the Packers that were constructed by Ron Wolf. You've got Reggie White, who is a free agent. You've got Keith Jackson, who came over in a trade. Brett Favre, who came over in a trade. Andre Rison, who is a street free agent at the end of the nearing the end of his career, but came in and was someone who the Packers, you know, had a need for, plugged into the system, and winds up being a contributor on a Super Bowl winning team. And that's been my criticism and was my criticism of the late Ted Thompson. But that didn't have anything to do with his character. Ted Thompson was as honest as you can find, and he was as caring a guy as you can find. He really did care for his players. But moreover than anything else, what Ted Thompson tried to do was put the organization first. He put the organization in front of himself. He put the organization in front of any one individual player. And for the most part, the Packers were very successful in that span. But again, oftentimes you've got franchises that are judged by how many Super Bowls you appear in and how many Super Bowls you win. And the fact of the matter remains, the Packers kind of got hot in January of 2011 and went on this amazing run and wound up winning Super Bowl 45. You can't fault Ted Thompson for his team getting hot at the right time. This was a team that was built for regular season success under Ted Thompson. This was not necessarily a team that was built to go to the Super Bowl every year or every other year or every 3 years or every 4 years. They went once. So I wanted Ted to be more aggressive. And, you know, I will maintain that. I think I would be a phony if I would sit here and say that I thought that Ted Thompson was the best general manager in NFL history, because I don't think that he was. I think he was blessed with a great quarterback that fell to him at number 24 back when he first took over the team in 2005 and was able to pick guys that complemented him. Again, I went through the list. I mean, David Bakhtiari was a great pick. Nick Collins was a great pick. Clay Matthews, he traded up to get. That was an aggression from Ted that we never thought we would ever see. I was at the Packers draft headquarters that night, and after B.J. Raji was taken at number 9, we all figured that the Packers were going to be done for a while, and we all went upstairs to the cafeteria, and when the Packers, because there's a TV on in the cafeteria, when it was announced that the Packers were trading into the next pick, I believe it was number 26, if I'm not mistaken, I mean, I've never seen spaghetti fly that fast and, you know, out-of-shape reporters flying down two flights of stairs as fast as I've ever seen in my life. Except for that night, because it was so out of Ted's character. But it worked out. Ted drafted Davante Adams. Spectacular pick. And stuck with Davante Adams through some of his early struggles. So again, I liked Ted Thompson. I really did. I just wanted him to be a little bit more aggressive. That's all. But again, the Packers would not have had the success that they had during the 13 years that he was their general manager if it weren't for all of the buttons that he was able to push in the draft and all the trades that he was able to make, trading one guy out and then trading for a guy, maybe a couple of fifth round picks or a couple of fourth round picks, because that's seemingly a lot like his predecessor, Ron Wolf. That's where Ted really shined, because he was a scout, because he was a guy who I think was happiest when he was in a dark room with film, just evaluating guys on tape. I don't think there was a general manager. Now, there may have been scouting directors around the NFL that put in as many hours in the film room as Ted Thompson, but I don't think there was another general manager in the NFL during that time, the guy who was at the head of the organization, that put in more time in the facility looking over tape of guys that he may or may not draft. The NFL draft, I mean, that's where Ted Thompson shined. And that was really, by design, his design, the only way that the Packers were going to build a team that could sustain success. And they did sustain success. There's no question that this was the class of the NFC North when Ted was in charge. But, again, his passing, very sad. My heartfelt condolences go out to his family and his friends, and certainly those in the Packers organization, front office, players, coaches that knew Ted Thompson, that had the personal relationship with Ted Thompson, and certainly an affinity for Ted Thompson. And I had an affinity for him because, again, this is a guy who would just every once in a while just very slyly, and he knew, just very slyly drop in something that we could use as fodder, you know, on a radio show the next day, poking a little bit of fun at the guy, but he always took it in stride. You know, maybe something like,
our doctors laid their hands on him. Try not to do too much of that. I know that's boring. We made some calls, as we always do, fishing, and nobody really seemed to be that interested in coming back. He's a man's man. He wears that ugly orange all the time.
Okay, moving along. As for the Packers, as for the NFC Championship game coming up on Sunday, what do they have to do differently this weekend as opposed to October 18th when they got slaughtered 38-10? And then, don't forget, the Packers got up 10-0 after one quarter and then just got swallowed whole by Tampa Bay. In the second and third quarter, that's where the Buccaneers scored all of their points. By the end of the third quarter, it was 38-10, and that was your final score. Nothing went well for the Packers that day. Aaron Rodgers was 16 of 35, 160 yards, no touchdowns, two interceptions. Terrible game for him. Jamal Williams, 34 yards. A.J. Dillon, 31 yards. Aaron Jones, 10 carries for 15 yards, only averaging a yard and a half per carry, although he did score the games, or for the Packers, their lone touchdown. Davante Adams, 6 receptions. MVS, Robert Tonyan, 3 receptions, Aaron Jones, 3 receptions out of the backfield as well. It just wasn't a game that was very well played. Except by the Buccaneers. The Buccaneers were almost perfect, and it wasn't necessarily Tom Brady. He was okay. I mean, for Tom Brady, 17 of 27, 166 yards. So, look, I mean, those numbers just by themselves are indirect comparison to that of Aaron Rodgers. Aaron, 16 of 35, 160 yards. Tom Brady, 17 of 27, 166 yards. But there are two stark differences as you look inside the box score a little bit more. Tom Brady wasn't touched. Tom Brady did not get sacked once in this game. Aaron Rodgers took it 4 times to the turf. Also, Aaron Rodgers throwing the 2 interceptions. Tom Brady took care of the ball, didn't throw any interceptions. So that's the difference, and that's how you get a quarterback rating of 104.9 versus a quarterback rating of 35.4. The other thing, two other things, that the Buccaneers really did well against the Packers back on October 18th. Number one, Ronald Jones crammed it down their throats on the ground. 23 carries for 113 yards, averaging almost 5 yards per carry, including a couple of touchdowns. That's one. The Packers were completely unable to stop the run. We were wondering what the hell is wrong with Kenny Clark? What the hell is wrong with Preston Smith? What are these guys doing? Maybe the problem on the Packers defense wasn't Blake Martinez after all, although I never really thought that it was Blake Martinez, but that seemed to be the popular narrative. The Packers were awful in this game. They did so little well that it's hard to imagine that these two teams are meeting again in the NFC Championship game. Here's the other thing, though, that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers did better than the Packers. Yes, they created turnovers. That's part of it, but, you know, you win the turnover battle 3-0. Okay, great. But the one thing that they really were able to control is the fact that they weren't penalized once in this game back on October 18th. If you don't commit a penalty, and if you win the turnover battle, I promise you, you're going to win 99 out of 100 football games in the NFL. I don't know that they're all going to be 38-10, but if you don't commit any penalties and you win the turnover battle, you're going to win the game. And the Packers were awful at both on this particular afternoon. Now, a lot of people say, well, the weather is going to favor the Packers this year. I agree. The weather is going to favor the Packers this year, but Mother Nature is not going to win this game for the Packers. The Buccaneers are in the NFC Championship game for a reason. Yes, so are the Packers. But consistently, everyone that I've spoken to, everyone that I've heard on sports talk radio this week, everyone that I know, seems to be so confident that the Packers are going to win this game. I think they should win this game, especially with the way that they've been playing lately. But the Buccaneers, again, are here for a reason. They've got a great defense. They've got Vita Vea coming back. He's going to clog up the middle. He's going to create mismatch opportunities. Corey Linsley's going to have his hands full. The guards are going to have their hands full. But the other difference that I see in this Packers team on January 23rd as opposed to the Packers team that I saw back on October 18th, is you've got a quarterback right now in Aaron Rodgers who's just in this zen zone. And if you listen to any of his news conferences, you kind of get the feeling that, yeah, this is a big football game coming up on Sunday, but, you know, there's other stuff going on. You don't have to ask me all X's and O's questions. Let's chop it up. What do you got? Let's talk about Eastern philosophy. Because Aaron right now is practicing what he likes to call his attitude of gratitude.
I've been thinking a lot about that over the years. I got a good friend who I talk to frequently about this kind of stuff. And he's been talking about that idea for a long time. His name is Blake. So I don't know. I mean, I just think it's a good way to live. It's a perspective change, you know, where I think a lot of us, myself included at times, we think too much about what we don't have, comparing ourselves to other situations. And I think that robs you of a lot of the joy you can take with you in your daily journey. And so just, you know, counting my blessings that I do have, being thankful for the things that I have, not wishful or ruining the things that I don't have or haven't accomplished or want to accomplish, it allows me to stay in the present a little better. And staying in the present allows me to have that good awareness about the things that are important to me.
Aaron Nagler, go ahead.
A number of weeks ago, you were asked by Pat on his show regarding the playlist that you had suggested for the Bose people. And you said that apparently the Bose folks weren't very receptive to what you had to offer. Are there any songs or particular artists that you'll be listening to Sunday pregame?
Yeah, I mean, you know, on that shoot, I tried to get him to play Sleeping at Last. And Sleeping at Last has some incredible songs. Many of them are actually instrumental only. But he's done a number of albums about the different just kind of things in our environment. He's got a record called Atlas. And he goes, and he's got a number of other records that go through emotions, they go through planets, oceans, and it's a really calming vibe. He's got a fantastic voice too. So I was trying to get him to play one of those and say, look, this is what I actually listen to on game day. If you want this to be authentic, you know, I grew up listening to some 90s rap and 90s alternative grunge, but on game day, I listen to, you know, slower stuff. I listen to this, you know, particular band, Sleeping at Last, a lot. And they gave me the old, like, oh, we couldn't get it cleared, or we couldn't get it, you know, okayed. And I said, well, I have a texting relationship with this person. I can text them and see if they'll, I'm sure they will. You know, they'd love for their song to make it on a commercial. But yeah, you know, that's what I think is so beautiful about the pregame. There's so many things going on, guys in their own kind of worlds, really. And you can only imagine what some of these guys are listening to. I hearken back to Brady Papinga, an old teammate, and I remember he talked about listening to Enya before the games. New age, incredible musician and singer. I kind of mix it up, but I always have some Sleeping at Last in there.
Mike Clemens?
You know, I remember the Enya thing, but I remember weird stuff. You remember everything. You remember, you know, Spock lines from Star Trek War for the Voyage Home. And do you do things
like Star Trek 2, The Wrath of Khan? That's a good one.
You probably know the whole dialogue. Do you? I know you've done that probably since as a kid. It's fun. It's competitive, trivia and all that. But how much of that do you do to be a better football player when it comes to memorizing game plans, seeing things on tape? I mean, do you work on your mind like that as much as you work on the rest of your body?
Yeah, that's a great question, Mike. And the answer is yes, I do. I think that's a really important part of it. I think the recall is most important. And I train myself, starting as a younger player, to put images in my mind when I break the huddle so that I can have that positive picture as I walk up the line of scrimmage. It's a matter of seconds or split seconds, but having that positive thought that comes to your mind, whether it's something you saw on film, or whether it's a play from practice or a play from a previous game that kind of hits you as you walk the line of scrimmage, has always been a positive part of my kind of pre-snap routine. It's a very quick thing that happens, but I think it's something that's very important. The recall, like I said, it is really, really important, not just for myself, but for the receivers and the pass catchers. Being able to remember things that were said, whether it was that week or a previous week or maybe the last year, Demonte has talked about at times, remembering things from previous games all the way back to 2014 that we had talked about or signaled or gone over that has helped them in the moments, or helped them when I give them, you know, an old signal. I look around and there's not many guys who know kind of the old kind of language of signals. So him and I sometimes have our own stuff that kind of only him and I know, because the signals that were used in the old offense, and the ability to recall those things in the moment is what makes our connection so special and what makes that part of the game a lot of fun.
That's how a lot of Aaron's pressers have gone lately. Light on football, heavy on philosophy, which I think partially comes with age and it comes partially with success. Conversely, though, Tom Brady, 43 years old, 6 championships, 9 Super Bowls, he's still, even in Tampa Bay, the same robotic guy he's always been when he was asked about what makes his counterpart, Aaron Rodgers, so good.
You know, he basically does everything well, so he's got great command and experience, you know, leadership, players are playing hard. You know, he's got a great style of play. So he obviously throws the ball as well as any quarterback, gets rid of the ball quickly, has great vision of the field, is able to extend plays with his legs. And, you know, it's a lot of explosive players he's got. So they got a great football team, and they got obviously a top scoring offense or a top offense, however you see it. And it's a big test. We're going to have to go up and play great football to beat them.
We'll go to Jenna Lane.
Hey, Tom. Coach Arians just gave us the news that Antonio Brown's not going to be making the trip with you guys to Green Bay. I know you guys are really close and have put in so much work this year. What does it mean for you guys to go up there, not to have him, and how can you guys overcome that loss?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to have to find a way to win, you know, and it obviously sucks for Antonio. We all wish he could be out there with us. And other guys are going to have to step up and do a job. So got a lot of confidence in the guys that haven't been out there as much when AB's been in there. And, you know, wish everybody could play. We're, you know, lost a few guys, you know, over the course of, you know, the season. So it's a great game to play in. You want everyone to play in this game. You know, we're going to have to figure out a way to win regardless.
We'll go to Greg Allman. Hey, Tom, going back to March, when Jason reached out to you about coming to join this team, I know this was very much part of the plan, part of the hope for what this team could do. What are the things you think about that gave you the most confidence in the team you were joining?
Well, I think I looked at just the whole situation. There was a lot of there was a lot of reasons to come here, and obviously, great coaching staff, a lot of really great players, and just wanting to come and compete. And loved working with my teammates. We've all worked really hard to get to this point. To play in a championship game is a great experience, and I love being able to do that with, this group of guys who's worked really hard to get to this point. And, that we competed hard. We had a few rough moments in there, but we won two playoff road games, and we're going to have to win a third if we want to get to continue playing. So it's a tough test. It's a great football team we're playing. Certainly not an easy task, but we got to figure out a way.
We'll go over to Ben Bolin.
Hey, Tom, congrats on making another conference championship game. We saw your leadership right from the get-go when you were organizing those off-season throwing workouts with your new teammates. Bruce Arians the other day even said you're kind of like a coach this year. How different is this leadership role for you coming to a new team with all these new players, and how much have you enjoyed that this year?
Yeah, I feel like it's very much I've tried to be very consistent over a period of time, and just – show up every day with an attitude to get the work done. And I've got a lot of people that, I really rely on. The other quarterbacks, our quarterback coach, Byron, our coordinator, we're all working hard to try to put the team in a position to win. So I have a lot of experience playing, and, I like to try to convey a lot of different things that I think could be successful. And, whether it be a physical thing to a player, could be a certain way that I see something happening. I think we have a great communication, great rapport with everyone. And the only way to work through things are to communicate through them. And it's been a really fun process. And we put ourselves in a decent position. Now we got to go capitalize on it.
We're going to go over to Sarah Walsh.
Hey, Tom. Bruce talked earlier this week about his message being clear and that it's you don't play in the Super Bowl this week and the focus is on the Packers. I was just wondering, I know you talk to these guys a lot and pull them aside. Did you have a specific message that you've sort of harped on with a lot of these guys this week that haven't been there before?
Well, I think our coaches have done a great job keeping us focused on what, we got to do. And again, it's I think everyone knows what's at stake. You don't get to this point. You don't win one game and get here. You gotta go through, a whole process to do it. And our team's done that, got through the regular season, put ourselves in a decent position, and again, won two road playoff games, and we got a chance to, for four quarters of football to get back home to a home Super Bowl, which would be a pretty cool thing. So we worked hard this week. Still a lot of mental prep to go, and got to be at our best Sunday at 3 o'clock.
So what else is going to make the Buccaneers go on Sunday? On my weekend radio show with Chuck Garbitti and on 97.3 The Game in Milwaukee, we had on Buccaneers Radio Network sideline reporter TJ Reeves. We asked him how this turnaround season for the Buccaneers in a pandemic has gone for him.
It has been exciting. It has been bizarre, almost surreal. I am one of those. I'm going to go all the way back to 10 months ago. I never believed Tom Brady would play for anyone other than the New England Patriots. I thought he would either play for them or retire. And then, oh, wait a minute. He's coming to the team that I work for, and I'm part of the radio broadcast, and he's here to try to help the Buccaneers restore some credibility, become a playoff team. And all of that has obviously now come to fruition. It's not been entirely because of him, but obviously he's the biggest component to changing a lot of the culture, obviously cutting down on the turnovers, winning the big games that matter right now. Again, you're talking about so much success Green Bay has had being in the NFC Championship game now 3 years in a row. Buccaneers haven't been in the playoffs for 13 years, haven't been in an NFC Championship game in 18 years, Chuck and Doug. So it has been dry, and Tom Brady has helped provide that. And there is so much optimism right now, so much rejuvenation right now in and around this area. Buccaneer fans are on fire for what could be potentially about to happen.
I've always said that the most difficult thing in sports to do is to change a losing culture to a winning culture. From an insider's perspective, do you think that it was more tangible, Tom Brady bringing in his talent, bringing in his six championship rings, or was it something that was more intangible, as in the other guys on the roster saying, well, now we have to live up to this standard and we should strive to live up to this standard?
It's a good question. And of course, this franchise, unfortunately, by and large, has been the poster franchise for what not to do with trying to get it right. But they absolutely got this right in steps. First of all, you got Bruce Arians, who's an experienced coach who had won Coach of the Year with two different teams. Remember, he took over for Chuck Pagano in Indianapolis when Pagano was sick with leukemia, led them the rest of the way as the interim coach and led them into the playoffs and got Coach of the Year. Then went to Arizona, led them to the playoffs with Carson Palmer and the NFC title game. So that was the first building block. And I believe that was a big reason why Tom Brady was interested in this situation, among several, was that Arians was going to be the coach and had that track record. But you're right. The winning mentality had to start even in what limited offseason you could have back in the offseason and in August with your training camp. There's a certain way we do things, a certain way that we did things in New England. And when he had Gronkowski around him to help some of these other guys realize it, attention to detail in practice, film room, practice, weight room, those kind of things. And then you bring in the 2020 component of COVID-19 and stay away from it and be responsible and socially distance from each other and follow the guidelines and the rules. You mix all of that together, and obviously the Buccaneers lined up some things in terms of the culture that has set the table for what they have been able to do down the stretch of this season.
What is it like as a sideline reporter in this area of COVID when you have everything going on that it is, and you're trying to get information, you're trying to disseminate that information, you try to get it out to people? What is that like right now on the sidelines in the NFL?
It has been strange. It has been different. It has been a challenge. It's been all of those things. So in our world, much like most of the NFL broadcasts, including the Packer broadcast with Wayne and Larry, and I believe it's John Kuhn who's on your sideline, we're there for home games in our instance, and we're down in the front row, what's known as the operational zone, and that's where you see the TV third reporter, the third person or the fourth person that's on each sideline. We're in that operational zone, so we're not actually on the field, but we're able to see things and report from down there about what we see with injuries and get information and give different perspective. Now, in our case and in most of the franchise's cases, we did not travel the entire year on the road. So we've done the games remotely off television. It is surreal, Chuck, that you're sitting and calling games off TV. Although you and I have experience having done PGA Tour radio on Sirius XM, and to pull the curtain back a little bit, a lot of times you're calling golf shots off TV.
Yes.
So it's good practice with having to do that off the monitor. But so that's been our world. So unfortunately, we are not there to be at Lambeau. It is strange. It is weird. We were not in Washington. We were not in New Orleans just because of safety, the guidelines, COVID-19, the restrictions, travel, that kind of thing. That is our world. That's our reality. So we're broadcasting remotely off TV again. But if the Buccaneers find a way to win this game, and I know Packer fan doesn't want to hear it, and everybody in your audience doesn't want to hear it, but if the Buccaneers find a way to win this game, we are broadcasting the Super Bowl out of Raymond James Stadium, the Buccaneers' home, in 2 weeks, which is surreal on steroids if that ends up happening after this game Sunday.
And, of course, the Packers are trying to get back to Raymond James Stadium. They played there in mid-October, and things, well, they didn't necessarily go well for Green Bay that day. It was Aaron Rodgers' worst performance by far that we've seen in years from him. What did the Buccaneers do to take Green Bay so far out of what they had been doing through the first 5 weeks of the season?
That is the $64,000 question, isn't it? And that day, I will tell you, being down there again at field level in the front row, I'm watching the Packers drive down the field the first two times, get a touchdown, and then get a field goal. And I'm thinking, this could be a blowout. And I was right. And then the Buccaneers blew the Packers out and scored 38 straight points. It's one of the craziest turnarounds that I've seen in nearly 20 years of doing what I do in this role. Where that second quarter, they got Rodgers on a pick six that seemed to rattle him. You don't see that very often. And he threw another interception right after that. They then began to bring the blitz, pressure him, knock him down, sack him. He was completely uncomfortable. And the game was 28-10 at the half. And in the opening drive of the second half, Brady was surgical coming down the field to get another touchdown, 35-10, and basically game over at that point. I don't think you can go into this game. I do not believe Bruce Arians, Todd Bowles, the defensive coordinator of the Buck defense, going into this game believing we're going to get two or three turnovers from the Packers like they did last week against the Saints. You have to look at it as maybe we will get one. It's a bonus if you get a second one, if you can create something, make something happen. You're going to have to play solid defense, probably some tough man-to-man defense on Devontae Adams, on Valdez-Scantling, Lazard going deep down the field and try to keep that from happening. And I think the mentality has to be try to with the blitz, try to, with the outside rush, put pressure on Rodgers, knock him down, make him uncomfortable. That was a big part of the blueprint back in October, for whatever it's worth. But one more quick note on that. The Bucs have said all week, Bruce Arians said it again one more time yesterday, we didn't really even look at the tape of October. We're not dwelling on that game that was basically 11 or 12 weeks ago. We're more concerned with what do the Packers look like right now? How did they look in the final game with the Bears? How did they look in the playoff game last week with the Rams? And try to go at it. And he said in looking at those games, they're doing different things in terms of their protection, in terms of their route running. So that was just very interesting that he's saying, hey, October was October. It doesn't mean a whole lot once this one starts at Lambeau.
Is that going to be a similar blueprint for the Green Bay Packers defenses to make Tom Brady uncomfortable, and not only uncomfortable, but maybe introduce him to the frozen tundra at Lambeau Field?
That's the key, because the first two playoff games, the line has done a tremendous job protecting him. He got sacked twice at the end of the Washington game when they basically had the lead and it didn't matter as much. He only got sacked one time in the first half in the New Orleans game and only got hit one other time the entire game. So that is a pretty telling performance and stat on the offensive line for the Bucs. But if you're Green Bay, you want to crank up some kind of pass rush, some kind of blitz here, make him uncomfortable, get him to do what he hasn't done, which is throw a postseason interception, get him rattled, because obviously if you can get up a couple of scores, it's big trouble for the Buccaneers in that environment, and a big part of that will be trying to rough up the 43-year-old who's leading this team like he's a 33-year-old right now. It's unreal.
What kind of a lift does Vita Vea give the Buccaneers defense, in your opinion, after missing so many weeks?
So he is a hulking defensive tackle and has been the number one run-stopping force they have in the middle of the defense. And I don't know how much he can play in this game. I do know he's been able to work out the last couple of weeks, and they are obviously convinced that he can play some. This is a former number one pick out of the University of Washington, primarily a run-stopper. Takes up double teams. Sometimes it takes two or three guys to be able to block him. That's going to free up Devin White and Levante David, the Bucs linebackers. But, yeah, it is a big deal that he's back. I know they had a goal, if they got to the playoffs, that he could maybe be healthy enough after a broken leg the first week in October. He is now healthy enough. He is going to try it. You've got Ndamukong Suh there, who Packer fans know all about from his days with the Lions in the middle of the defense. Jason Pierre-Paul, the former New York Giant who's been down here for 3 years, is chomping at the bit. He has a ring with the Giants. So the Buck defensive line is going to be ready here in this game, and Vea is obviously a welcome addition.
So where are you going to be for this game? Are you in Green Bay, or are you going to be back in Tampa?
So we're back remotely doing the game at an empty Raymond James Stadium, Chuck. It is bizarre, but this is what we have done throughout the year. We have televisions. We have a couple of different feeds. One of them is a special feed that we get from the networks, from Fox in this case, where we're seeing all things at all times. It's interesting, that feed that we watch, and we do the best that we can with that. And again, it's been a mix, because when you have a home game, you're in your normal element and your normal environment. In my case, I'm down in that front row working the same way that I would normally work. So this will be as surreal a situation for us to be away from it, just like most of the Buccaneer fans, while the game is going on at Lambeau.
So do you get your own suite, and then do you have your own concessions, and you have your own bathroom? It's got to be a pretty sweet deal, I would imagine.
Okay, so I'll help you. The answers are check,
yes,
check,
yes,
and check.
There you go.
We have our own on all of those inside the stadium. And what is crazy, guys, just to give you a little more insight, is the NFL has taken over Raymond James Stadium 2 weeks ago to get ready for this little football game.
Oh, right.
Super Bowl 55,
yeah.
Whoever's playing. So, I mean, you've got layers of security that you can't believe with us trying to get where we would normally go, because the NFL right now controls the stadium. So it has been wild the last 2 weeks in the playoffs. It'll be wild again tomorrow to be detached from all of this. But I'll say one more thing to you real quick. The Tampa Bay Lightning won a Hockey Stanley Cup, winning the games in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, in a bubble with no Lightning fans able to be there. The Tampa Bay Rays got all the way to the World Series, had to play playoff games in San Diego. No playoff games at home. Played them in San Diego with the Yankees and the Astros. Eventually got all the way to Game 6 with the Dodgers in Arlington, Texas, where no Rays fans could be at any of these games, basically. And now the Bucks have played in Washington, New Orleans, and now Green Bay and can't be there. We're still in the same mode that we're all just watching detached remotely to see what happens. But it's been good right now to be in this area so far with the team being far away and not being able to be there.
I've just got one final question about covering Bruce Arians. You can never take any of his press conferences live, can you? There's always like a dump switch that somebody's got his finger on, right?
There is a danger. It is funny that you say that. Because in the aftermath of the Washington win on that Saturday night, the Saturday night primetime game, a lot of the local TV stations were running his Zoom live. Hopefully they all had the delay because there was more than one or two words that let's just say were not suitable for all audiences when he was talking about the inability to tackle or the inability to put the game away. You automatically know where he stands. He's fantastic to deal with. He is direct, yes, but he's got a great sense of humor. And I think this team has responded to that. They play hard for this guy. They played hard for this guy in Arizona and in Indianapolis, and it's not hard to see why they want to play hard for Bruce Arians and his staff in Tampa Bay.
Buccaneers Radio Network sideline reporter T.J. Reeves. Okay, so I got this calendar from my mother-in-law for Christmas, and she gets me a sports calendar every year, one of those tear-off, you know, fact-a-day type of things. And I meant to do this starting, 23 days ago, to give you whatever my fact of the day is on the calendar. So today's January 23rd. Yes, it's the 10-year anniversary of the Packers winning the NFC Championship game. That's true. But this is what the fact of the day calendar is for today. I don't know which one. It's not an ESPN calendar. I'll look it up. I'll have it for you on the next show. The rest of the calendar's on the other side of the room, and I can't get up and walk over and find it. I'll get it for you the next time. So this is what happened on January 23rd, 1983. Linebacker A.J. Dewey intercepts three passes to lead the Dolphins to a 14-0 triumph over the Jets in the AFC Championship game at the Orange Bowl in Miami. With the game scoreless at halftime, Woody Bennett runs 7 yards for a touchdown on Miami's first possession of the second half. In the fourth quarter, Dewey bats New York quarterback Richard Todd's pass into the air, catches it, and races 35 yards for the touchdown. Todd throws 5 interceptions. There you go. That's what happened on this date in 1983? Yeah, 1983, playing at the old Orange Bowl, the OB, which the site for the Orange Bowl, that legendary stadium in Miami, it's now the site for Marlins Stadium. They just tore it down and built a new one right on top of it with a retractable roof and a fish tank. All right, that'll about do it for this edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. Coming up tomorrow, if you're listening on Saturday, tune in on Sunday to 97.3, the game in Milwaukee, or WNFL Radio in Green Bay. We're on a new station in Rhinelander. We're on in Eau Claire. We're on all over the place. But we'll have a full day starting at 8 a.m. of Packers coverage on through the game. We'll have the national broadcast of the game from Westwood One as well. Kevin Harlan will be on the call. Again, starting at 8 a.m., it will be Chuck Garbedian, Billy Schmidt, and me. And then starting at 11 a.m., Billy's going to go to the game because he got a ticket. He got the golden ticket. Chuck Garbedian goes home. We've got another Chuck coming in, Chuck Freeman. So it'll be me and Chuck Freeman from 11 until 1. And then the game broadcast itself on 97.3, the game in Milwaukee. So we'll have pregame, the game, and then postgame with Drew and KB afterwards. Hopefully we're talking about a Packers appearance in Super Bowl 55. They are long overdue. This is a team that has been to the NFC Championship game now 5 times in Aaron Rodgers' starting career, and it's about high time that he wins another one. Yes, even if it's a decade in between those two games. So hopefully when we reconvene on Monday, we are talking about a Packers NFC Championship and a Super Bowl appearance. If not, we will do a long postmortem on this team as well and then turn the page to some other things that are going on, including the Bucs season, which so far hasn't necessarily had the look of a championship squad either. And I've also got a lot of thoughts on the Milwaukee Brewers as they get set to
begin to get the trucks down to Arizona for spring training. But a lot to get to between now and then, including a matter of a little football game coming up on Sunday. Go Packers. We're hoping that we've got some great stuff to talk about and a celebration to have on Monday as well. Have a great weekend. Win, lose, or draw. We'll see you on Monday right here on the Doug Russell Podcast.